is Jared of the GM on ESPN 102.5. The game, NFL Combine in Indianapolis, has started. Floyd Reese, Vrabel will talk tomorrow. John Robinson will talk tomorrow. Tons of Titan stuff to get into over the next couple of days. We've got our first controversy of the Combine. Joe Burrow's got a 9-inch hand. I want to get your thoughts on that in a second, but I am actually surprised. The text line has blown up with people wanting to talk about boxing. Is that a surprise to you?
A little bit. But
I mean, it was an entertaining fight. Like, I'm not a boxing guy by any means. It's crazy that I actually watched the fight. Floyd didn't watch the fight. Floyd is, what, 10 times the boxing guy I am?
I enjoy boxing. My whole family, my grandfather was the Western States heavyweight champ, which was from like Colorado West.
Did he get in the ring with Ali or Frazier or Foreman?
No.
Rocky Marciano or Joe Louis?
An uncle that was a second-rated middleweight in the world.
Needs to gain weight, getting a heavyweight.
Yeah.
Go after Tyson Fury. But, again, you are a much bigger boxing guy than I. Like, even when you were GM of the NFL, you probably watched the big fights,
didn't
you?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
So, I'm a little stunned, though. Like, people have been texting the text line. Somebody saying that Anthony Joshua is out there and that would be the next contestant.
Oh, heavyweight?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I know the names. Anthony Joshua, Canelo Alvarez, Triple G. Like, I know these names. I don't know anything about them in boxing. And I would say boxing needs some stars now. Fury and Wilder, they may actually be legit stars.
Well, you just look at their records, and you know that they fought enough. They were both undefeated. I think they both had a tie. But, I mean, they were, you know, they each one fought at least, I want to say, you know, near 30 fights.
How about this? Texter says they showed a graphic on ESPN that a Wilder haymaker has as much force as a Derrick Henry full-on truck. 1,300 pounds of force.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And it's funny because it doesn't look like they're hitting that hard on TV.
No, but when I was still playing, we used to condition, we would box.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you what now. You get in a ring for 3 minutes with some gloves and dance around and box, you'll see what being in shape is. That's why you have to love these boxers. I mean, what they do to get in the shape they're in, to be able to go that long in these fights is phenomenal.
Especially a guy like Fury's 290 pounds.
Big guys. Both of them big guys.
But, I mean, like, yeah. Wilder's what, like 235 or something like that? I mean, that is...
I think he's bigger than that, isn't he? I thought he was like 260 or something.
I thought he checked in at 235, but I could be wrong.
You could be right. No,
but, I mean, like, the middleweight fighters, I mean, they've got to try to make the weight. That I think has got to be tougher than a heavyweight fighter who can basically weigh whatever he wants and just get after it. But to your point, I mean, Fury, for him to move at his size, that cannot be easy. I want to get to that controversy, though, at the Combine. Joe Burrow's hand size is 9 inches, and people are making a big deal about that. Now, I think the other things he checked in at, he was fine, but a 9-inch hand size, which is apparently the same size as Ryan Tannehill's hand, which is that 9 inches. Let me get you the whole thing on what Burrow was. Tua, for example, was 9 inches and 7/8. Burrow was 9 inches straight up. And Joe Burrow has just tweeted out in the last 30 minutes that he is considering retirement after he was informed the football will be slipping out of his tiny hands. Please keep me in your thoughts from Joe Burrow. Floyd, what do you make of the quote-unquote controversy from the first day of the Combine, Joe Burrow's little hands?
I mean, that is a little bit small. And as long as you can control the ball and keep it in a tight spiral, I don't think it affects the pass. Where you see the most effect, and we see this with Ryan Tannehill, is when you get hit and you're in the pocket and you're trying to hold the ball in one, you know, in a hand and you get hit. I mean, your chances of you fumbling, I think, get really big.
And Tannehill is a fumbler.
And Tannehill, that happens with Tannehill a little bit. And so I think that's where it's the biggest factor is, you know, you being able to control the ball when you get smacked a little bit. But if you can control the ball, which it looks like he does, you know, while you're passing, I mean, I think he'll be fine.
I just wonder, like, how big of a difference is it that Tua's is, you know, a third of or two thirds of an inch bigger than his? Is it that like the end of the world? Is that
no? That's not. I mean, they're both neither one are. You know, keep in mind, Javon's was 12 inches. So,
Burrow 6'3.5", 221. Meanwhile, Tua 6'2", 217. Any problem with heights and weights?
I mean, Tua's not very big, but I think we knew that.
I think Tua's biggest problem is that he's going to get hurt in the NFL because he's not big. He looks frail. He's,
if you're not big and you take shots like that, you're going to get hurt. I mean, that's the scary part. And 6 foot, what was it, 215?
217.
I mean, that's pretty.
And a guy like Tua is probably bulked up for the combine. Like, he's probably, you know, chugged about 8 waters before he steps onto that scale. And he's trying to be 217 pounds. How important did you view the weigh-ins, the measurements, the of this kind of thing compared to maybe what a guy shows you on tape?
Compared to tape?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not even close. You know, tape is everything compared to what you're getting here with these numbers. There's going to be, you could go through the whole combine. Now, this, keep in mind, this combine is, for the first time, different. I mean, they're changing a ton of the things that go on at the combine, and it sounds like for the better, but you know, we'll have to wait and see with all that. But I think the numbers, you know, all the numbers you get here, there's maybe two or three numbers that are really pertinent to you, and the rest of it is you know, the medical, which is everything, and so far ahead of everything else, it's probably not even, you know, the rest of it doesn't count. Then you got the interviews, which are kind of, you know, they've gotten to the point now where they need to change up the interviews a little bit, even though they're changing it up this time, I know. But they need to adjust a little bit. I mean, it's, you know, it's all the agents have got them, and they go through the routine. And I mean, I can't tell you the number of agents that have called me over the last little bit and said, hey, you know, can you train my guys on these, you know, on the combine interview and what to do, what not to do, and all that.
And what have you said to that?
No.
Why not?
No.
Why not?
I don't want to do it.
Why?
Because
why?
I just don't want to do it. I don't want to be one of them.
you would think that you're a snitch, wouldn't you?
No, it wouldn't.
You
be
would
a
feel
snitch.
Like a snitch or a sellout, or
I mean,
that you crossed the picket line over to the agents from the GMs.
It's getting more and more, or less and less important, the interviews than they've been. They cut the interviews back by like 15 or 20. They used to be, I think, 60, and they cut them back to like 40. Something like that, and they're making them a little bit longer, but because, you know, you go through all these things in the interview, you get to a point you can tell who the guy's agent is by the way he answers questions. That's ridiculous.
That's awful. That's awkward,
yeah,
and unfortunate and embarrassing. But could we do this week? You asking me questions, like I'm getting interviewed.
Are you going to be completely honest?
No. I mean, hold on, wait a minute. When you say, am I going to be honest about my answers, are those guys that you're interviewing at the combine going to be honest about their answers?
I already know the answers to the questions I'm asking them.
Okay. So then why don't you ask questions to me that you already know the answers to?
Well, I don't know much about you. I don't know if you've ever been in trouble. I don't know if you've ever had problems in school. I don't know if you've got arrested. I don't know any of that.
We spend 5 hours together every day.
Yeah.
We talk about everything.
Yeah.
It is funny. So people have asked me, for some reason, this question comes up a lot of times. People are like, so are you and Floyd like friends? And I'm like, what do you think? Like at the end of a segment, like the microphones just go off and we just sit there and look at it like the wall. Like, I don't know what you think happens. Like, I don't think that we could do this job if we weren't at least, I mean, like, I wouldn't consider you, like,
you wouldn't invite me out to go clubbing.
I mean, I would. You wouldn't come. But Hey, we're doing the show at Tin Roof on Friday with Nashville SC. What has to happen for the GM to stand by afterwards and have some pops afterwards with the people and me?
I'm going to be.
It's Fireball Hot Take Friday. Yeah, oh, you're gone Friday. Yes. Oh, that's right. Oh, God. Floyd's coach. Can we tell the people what happened?
Sure.
So Floyd's high school football coach, who I met once, who was literally like 100 years old.
Close.
Passed away last week?
A couple weeks ago, actually.
And so this weekend is going to be the funeral or the celebration of life or
memorial,
whatever.
For
Coach.
For him and the family.
And I met him once, and he was a sharp dude at like 95 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Sharp.
At 95 years old, at junior college in Stockton, California, he was coaching judo. Imagine that. Now, this is a tough hombre.
I mean, I would say this, just the little interaction I have with Coach, probably not surprised that it happened. I'm talking about him. He's probably not surprised it happened, and I'm sure that deep down inside, you know, he lived a long life.
Oh, yeah.
So our thoughts are with you and everybody else for Coach, but you're not going to be there Friday, so I forgot. So, but at some point, if I invite you out, will you go out?
Can I take Sal?
Well, yeah, but that kind of defeats the point. I mean, like, if we're hanging out at, like, a bar,
well,
and we're over
what am I
going
to do hanging out at a bar?
I mean, just you said it. Have a couple pops.
That would be it.
Yeah.
And then I got to go home.
Right.
Well, I'll be all right.
Come out for some pops sometime. I mean, you act like, you know, but it's funny because I get the question all the time. They're like, are you guys friends? And I'm like, yeah. Like, it's a very weird relationship because Floyd is so much older than me, has so much more life experience than me, and has so much more money than I do that it's like, you know, like our lives aren't very intertwined. Like, Floyd's got grandkids, and I don't even have a dog. So it's like there's so, you know, it's different. But, yes, to answer that question, I would like to think that we know enough about each other that you could interview me like you would interview one of these prospect people or whatever.
Well, keep in mind, when you're interviewing a prospect, you know, you're not interviewing the guys that are good guys. That sounds ugly. You're not interviewing the guys that have never had an issue.
Yeah, you're interviewing the Jeffrey Simmons.
You're interviewing the guys that there is something there that you need to get cleared up. Either an issue with a coach, an issue with law, an issue with school, an issue with something. And so when you sit down with these guys, you're going to ask them very poignant questions, but it's the questions that you already either know the answer to or, you know, there are strong indicators out there and you just want his explanation. You know, what's going on with you? So that's what you're looking for in those things.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, an interesting development with this new CBA. Last week, it looked like it was going to be a done deal at some point. Now it looks like, well, according to one ESPN analyst, that it could be headed down a really, really dark path. We'll get to that next. Live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Well, Greeny, the holdup is the 17-game season proposal. There are key players in a position of power who simply want nothing to do with 17 games no matter what. There are some other players that say, hey, we'll do it, but you got to put something on it. You got to give us a little extra revenue. And so this week at the Combine, it's going to get heated, and something has to give, because I'm told anything can happen, and the NFL could very well say, hey, we're just going to take our TV dollars, and we'll see you next March if you don't take this deal.
What are you hearing from people inside?
Man, I think the players are on the verge of a strike. That's what I think will happen. You can't have one CBA reflect the best interest of everybody. You said this on Friday's show, I believe. You have the super wealthy players who really don't have to work another day in their life. And then you have players like myself, played in the league, sure, for 4 years, but you're on and off a roster. You don't have the same amount of money. I think the players are on the verge of a strike because they're a competing agenda.
Emmanuel Acho talking about the CBA on ESPN. I thought last week we were right on the verge of getting a new CBA done and football was, and I was worried about the Titans only having one tag instead of the two tags if they got a new CBA done. And now I've got Emmanuel Acho this morning on ESPN saying a strike might be possible. He thinks the players are headed for strike. Now, I just think the players make too much money for them to actually strike. But what is going on with the CBA? And I've heard that it could be a wild week in Indianapolis as the NFL and the PA debate and discuss the CBA.
I think the impression I got is that the council or whatever they are, board of directors or whatever they call themselves, didn't want to make the decision. So they want everybody to get in on the vote. And that means it's going to take more time. So I think they're meeting like tomorrow and then voting on Wednesday. But, I mean, they've adjusted. They moved back the franchise tags and you know, done some things like that to help with, you know, they know that they're postponing it a few days. I get the impression that it is, you know, there are the guys out there that are okay with it. I mean, I had three or four agents call me this weekend. And like the first thing out of their mouths was, there is so much money in this deal going to the players. I mean, just a ton of money. And so all of these guys, you know, they're thinking to themselves, hey, I need to really get into this, to this NFL, you know, more than we have in the past. Guys that maybe dwindling out and going to baseball or going to basketball. And now they're coming back and they're going, oh, wait a minute. So I don't know. But I think the players have the group they're okay with, the group that still want a little bit, and then the group that says no. But I don't. I think I'd be surprised with a shock. I mean, with a strike.
Do you think a deal gets done soon?
You know what?
In the league? Like, how much of this is player posturing of like, you know, we're not going to take the first deal they give us, so we better, you know,
well,
we're going to complain about a couple of things, and we want a better deal, and then we'll get a better deal, and then we'll sign.
For them, this is the first time that I can remember that they've gone to a complete vote this early. So it has to be under consideration in spite of what they say, or else they wouldn't be going to all this trouble. All the other times on this first effort like this, it was rejected so fast it make your head swim.
Well, it was like Dan Graziano said on Friday on ESPN, and we played the clip on Friday, and he said that the PA negotiators have been negotiating this deal. It wasn't like the owners just wrote up a deal and handed it to the PA and said, take it or leave it. Like, the PA had been negotiating this deal,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Then the players that weren't part of the PA council got a hold of this deal, and these players were like, whoa, I don't want to sign this. And it's like, well, J.J. Watt, where the hell have you been in these negotiating sessions when they've been talking about these things? I mean, I think it's all valid. I just think ultimately the players make too much money for them to ever strike and miss out on a paycheck. Sure, Russell Wilson could miss a paycheck and be okay. But is Russell Wilson going to be worried about missing a paycheck so that the minimum wage guys get an extra 50 grand? And I don't think Russell Wilson's going to do that. And then as far as the minimum wage guys are, can they afford to miss, you know, if you're making 500 grand a year, that's a lot more money than the average American. Can you miss a game check or two to strike and you get no money instead of 500 grand?
Well, and they, I think this CBA was aimed a little bit lower when it came to where kind of the meat of the money was put, mm-hmm. You know. So it's aimed now at some of these middle of the road guys that really are never going to be big money guys, but can make a very nice living, and the practice squad, you know. And they're talking about increasing the numbers, and I mean, there's a lot of discussion about it now. But you know, again, I think just the idea that they're going ahead and voting on it this soon has to be positive. I don't know how that can be negative.
Any takeaways from what you've read that would come out of the CBA that you like or don't like? I know that you're a little weary of the 17 games, which is Jeremy Fowler said in the clip that we played coming back from break. There are some players that are just like, I'm not interested in playing 17 games.
Right.
Other than that, is there anything that stood out to you about what you've seen that was eye-opening that may change with this new CBA?
I don't know that there is. You know, the playoff format we talked about in the past is going to change. There will be a lot of little things, I think, that will change. And that will be, you know, those will be things that we won't notice for a while. But, I mean, if they're, like you said, the players have been in on this from the beginning. They've gone through a year of it. I mean, they're ready to present it. And so, and even, you know, the NFL ownership, I mean, they jumped right out there and voted for it and said, hey, let's go. I mean, there's, you know, they want to get their TV things done, and I understand that. And every one of those TV things that gets done just means there's more, you know, money in the players' pockets. I think they increased the players' percentage from like 48 to 49.5 or something like that.
I thought it was like from 45.5 to, at the end of the deal, like maybe a minimum of 48.5 or I don't know, something
don't
crazy
know.
Like that.
But
I'm with
increased.
You. I mean, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, the Predators have stood pat, basically, at the trade deadline. Is holding out hope that the Predators can get into the playoffs and turn it on a hope worth holding on to? We'll discuss next. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
This year has been going. I've seemed to be changing my mind and thought process a fair bit. I think, again, it's coaching change, and I know from having done this once or twice before that you need to buy some time. So I had to caution myself, if you will, in terms of making any rash decisions on a game or so. And, you know, you've seen some, again, clearly some ups and downs with our play since the coaching change, and some players are playing way better. Some players are not playing as well, but all in all, we're heading in the right direction. We're playing better as a team, and for the most part, individuals are playing better. And as I've said just a little bit earlier, we need to rise up now that this is our playoff push for everybody. And it starts with individuals rising up to living up to their and our expectations. And if we do that, then the team will rise up and we'll be happy.
That was David Boyle earlier today. He believes, like many fans I've talked to, that, hey, all this team has to do is just give it a go. As he said right there, rise up, get into the playoffs, and then anything can happen when you make it to the hockey playoffs. The one good thing, Pekka is playing out of his mind right now, at least in the last two games, and I believe that Pekka should be the starting goalie if the Predators make it to the playoffs. I don't know if he will be, but that's what I would do. Floyd, a lot of fans, just like what David said right there, have the belief that you just have to make it. Just make it to the playoffs. As you've said many times before, just
win, baby, win.
And just get me to the playoffs, baby.
Oh, just get me to the playoffs, baby.
Okay, so here you go. I'm using last year's playoffs as an example. The number one seed in the East, Tampa Bay, an all-time great team, got swept in four games by the eighth-seeded Columbus Blue Jackets. Columbus would lose in the second round. The eighth seed in the West, I believe, was Colorado. Colorado made it in there, and they beat Calgary in five games. So two number one seeds in the Western and Eastern Conference playoffs last year went down in a total of five games. So the eighth seeds both advanced. In fact, as we know well here, the second wild card, or the first wild card in the Western Conference, Dallas, won their playoff series in six games against the Predators last year. So both wild cards advanced. St. Louis ended up going six games in the first round, seven games in the second round, six games in the third round, and seven games in the fourth and final round to win the cup. So is it not an irrational hope to hold out the belief that this team can, A, make it to the playoffs, and B, if they get into the playoffs, can make some noise, because this sport is a kooky sport where anything can happen. I'll be honest with you. If this were football, I would have no faith in the Nashville Predators doing anything when they get into the playoffs. But it's not football. It's not basketball. It's not even baseball, where good pitching could get you through to a World Series. If the Predators, is it illogical to have the hope that this team that has been 3 points, 5 points, 1 point, 3 points, 5 points, 3 points, 1 point, 3 point, 1 point out of a playoff since November, that this team can A, get in, and B, make noise if they get in with the team they have?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about the fact, and Adam made me feel better when we talked about making
Adam
it. Yeah, Vingan, because he said, you know, there's no doubt in his mind. So,
well, he didn't say there's no doubt that they can't, that they will make it. He said there's no doubt that they should make it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And so I think they, I'm going to go with make it in. Once you make it in, then, you know, I don't know. I don't know where you go from there. I mean, I think the truth is you should be playing among the elite. But like you pointed out from last year, you know, the elite haven't played very well last year, at least last year. So, you know, being among the elite may not mean much. You know, maybe you need to be one of those grinders down there, you know, where you can just keep it going. But, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt this team is talented enough to make it. You know, for them to get very far, in my mind right now, I'd have to say a bunch of those talented guys, they're going to have to pick it up. You know, they're going to have to hit another gear here for us, which, I mean, we know they can. We've seen it, I don't know how many times. It's just a matter of if they will.
But what gives you hope that they'll do that? They haven't done it all year.
Playoffs. When you get to the playoffs, it all changes.
I know, but last year we operated off of that. Off the once you get to the playoffs, hey, just get in there, and then you know what? Your power play sucked all year, but it's not going to matter. Get in the playoffs, and you'll be fine. And what were they, like 0 of 16 on the power play last year in the playoffs?
Oh, they weren't very good.
I mean, there's no guarantee that just because you sucked at something in the regular season, you'll play harder in the playoffs, and thus you'll play better. I think the coach has got to change a little bit. I think the coach has to play these guys more, and I think the coach has to treat these guys like first-liners. I mean, I think that he needs to put the Joe Fillion back together and just let him go play. Like, I'm convinced of it. And I know you got to earn ice time and all this stuff, but I think he's got to put the Joe Fillion back together and let him play. I think it is, even though hockey's a weird sport, and maybe I'm just not giving enough credit to the randomness and the luck factor that goes into the playoffs and the fact that it's almost cumulative, right? Like, you have a good goaltending performance one night, you get a couple puck bounces another night, you're up 2-0 in a playoff series, you find yourself up 3-1, and then the other team packs it in and you win. And we've seen that a lot in the playoffs in hockey. And so it's a weird sport. It's a different sport. It's just, it's the playoffs in hockey are so unexplainable sometimes. And yet at the same time, I think it's a little illogical to hold out hope that this team that has played down to its competition all year is all of a sudden going to get into the playoffs and play at a level that we haven't seen them play all year. And yet I feel like both the fans and the general manager are banking on that hope. Without having actually seen it, they're banking on the hope.
But the truth is, I'm not sure we haven't played better against the better teams.
Oh, I mean, that's why I say play down to your competition.
Yeah, so when we play the better teams, we play better. That's why you keep thinking you get to the playoffs, you know, because you realize everybody's going to be good in the playoffs, and you've got to crank it up a few, and maybe you can. I don't know. I mean, I think they have, and I don't have any numbers to back this up, but just a gut feeling. I mean, the games that have been the most satisfying have been those against pretty good teams, and the teams that have been the least satisfying are like this weekend, you know, against teams that you think you should run over.
Oh, yeah. There's been a couple games where they've gone out there and they've gotten their rear end spanked, but it hasn't been against good teams. Vegas, remember? I mean, that Vegas wasn't a great team. Vegas spanked your butt. Vancouver's an okay team. Like, Vancouver's a good team. But Carolina is not a great team, and they spanked your butt pretty hard. And I'm trying to think, there was like Anaheim a couple times. There have been some embarrassing games against them. Toronto. Like, those, it's never when they play Washington or when they play, you know, the good, good, good teams. Other than there was a Pittsburgh game right after Christmas where they got housed, and Pittsburgh's a pretty good team. But they've not gotten embarrassed against the really, really good teams. It's been the middle-of-the-road kind of teams or the bad teams that have embarrassed them. So I think there's definitely something to be said for them playing down to their competition, which then would give you hope that they would play up to their competition if they got into the playoffs.
Yeah.
The problem is I just think this team is just not – I mean, I feel like you got to have like a grittiness and a toughness, and this team hasn't played with that. They had it 3 years ago.
Well, they had it
4 years ago. That team that went seven games against San Jose and lost in the second round, that team had some stones. This team, I think, kind of lacks what that team and the team after it that went to the Cup final had.
The other way of looking at it is, you know, you've got three or four or however many guys not playing up to their standards, and yet, you know, like David said, you're 8-4-1 in the last 12 or 13 or whatever that adds up to be.
I know, but you're still out of the playoffs. Like, yeah, when you, like, before you started those 13 games, how far were you out of the playoffs compared to what you are now? Because I feel like they've been a point or two or three out of the playoffs consistently for the last 3 months.
Right. But that's, again, I mean, like where we are right now, that's one win away from you win and they lose and you're in the playoffs.
I know, that's how close you are. But it feels like they've been there for 3 months now.
Well, yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, at least you're there. I mean, if you were 14 points out or something, then you'd start being concerned. So, I mean, I think it's always just, you know, one. And this homestand right now, or this next, what is it, 4 or 5 games? I mean, this will be gigantic.
Let's take your call, 615-737-1025. Do you still have the hope? Because David Poyle's got the hope that this team can turn it around and that this team will go deep. Do you still have that hope? 615-737-1025. We'll take your calls and your texts. You know who's proud to support the National Predators? My friends at Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. They take great care of my home, and I don't hope when Hiller comes to my home. I know for a fact that Hiller will come out and will do a great job, and that's why I entrust them with my home, and you should with yours. It's so simple. Just go right on your phone if you got an issue at your house to happyhiller.com, and right then and there, from the convenience of your phone, you can make your appointment just online. They'll then send you a confirmation text right back so you know when they will be at your house. And this is the last week to get in on their great HVAC promotion. They've extended it through February. So you've got only until the 29th. That's right, only until the 29th, where you can buy a new HVAC unit, and Hiller will pay your heating bills all year long. That's up to $1,200 worth of savings. Don't wait to schedule. Be like me and let Hiller take great care of your home. HappyHiller.com. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, proud supporters of the Nashville Predators and the Tennessee Volunteers. Jared of the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app. Jared of the GM, Preds Insiders, as you heard right there, following us tonight. The Predators did not make a lot of big trades. We'll go right to your text. Text or text into the text line, 615-737-1025. What's the bar for liking the John Hines hire come summer? A playoff appearance, a competitive first-round series, or a deep playoff run? Again, what is the bar for liking the John Hines hire come this summer, Floyd?
I mean, to be honest, I think probably making the playoffs would be a nice start. Simply because I don't care, and I know, you know, people try to make light of the fact that, you know, changing coaches maybe isn't that big a deal. I think it's gigantic. I mean, I think it's really, really big, and it takes an adjustment period, and it takes some time. That's why I'm so shocked. Especially in a sport, I think like hockey and basketball and things like that, where you change coaches in the middle of the year, and I know it works out sometimes. I understand that, but generally speaking, I'll bet it doesn't work out very often. So I would think if you make the playoffs, that's probably, you know, a good start.
So, I mean, I don't know. You can hold it to whatever standard you want to hold it to. I mean, to be completely honest, because I look at the other side of this, right, which is if John Hines doesn't make the playoffs, do we hold that against John Hines? And my gut tells me we should, but we're not going to. Like, we should because Hines was brought in to save the season. And if you don't make the playoffs, that means that he didn't save the season. So if he didn't save the season, then should we hold him accountable for that? And as I said, I don't think we will. I also, like, the other aspect of this was Poile kept hammering this away at his press conference for Hines, which was the best players on the team weren't playing well, and so he had to make a change. Well, he makes a change, and the best players on the team are not only not playing well, but they may actually be playing worse under Hines than they were under Laviolette. I'm not sure about that, but it just kind of feels that way a little bit. So you can hold it to whatever standard you want to hold it to. I mean, I think what'll happen is anything Hines does, he'll get tons of credit for, and maybe it's deserved. Anything he doesn't do, for this year, he won't get any blame for it. But next year, if they stink, then everyone's going to be upset about John Hines.
Sure. That's the way it's going to work. And I think that'll come, if they don't make the playoffs, that'll come much quicker than you think it will.
I think Poile will get the blame if they don't make the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, I think the calls we take, the texts we take, will be about David Poile, and they won't be about John Hines. And I mean, I think you're entitled to your opinion on all of those things.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the calls we took today about David Poile. They weren't exactly rosy, were they?
Were there some bad ones? I don't remember them.
Well, I mean, I thought they were. I mean, I'm not on the fire Poile bandwagon. But I think there were some calls today that were, you know, talking about how can a guy go 40, you know, 40 years and not win a cup.
Oh, that's right. That was
the luckiest guy in sports.
That was a serious call.
And then there was another guy that was, how much longer do you have to watch that? And I've said this again, you know, since the Kyle Turris trade, how many good moves have been made here? And I think it's worth looking, at least moves you would consider to be good moves. So I think you'll see the fans. You know, if they don't make the playoffs this year, I think it will fall at the feet of Poile. And I don't know how Poile will react to that, to be honest with you. There's a part of me that thinks he'll ignore it and just keep doing his job.
Oh, yeah.
There's a part of me that thinks he'll listen to it. And I hope he doesn't, but who knows?
Yeah. David's been there before, I'm sure.
But not in this city at this level.
Well, no. I mean, he's been at this city where things weren't going well.
No, but he had 18 years of no expectations, and he's had about the last five with just humongous expectations.
Right.
Well, it's different in life when there are expectations and when there are not. Go ask the Vanderbilt football coach if he put up the same record at South Carolina, what his life would be like compared to what it's like at Vanderbilt. And it's just not the same.
Well, no, but you'd put up a better record at South Carolina than you would at Vanderbilt.
And you put up a better record you're expected to put up a better record with the Predators when your owners are paying up to the salary cap, whereas before it was like, oh, can't keep that guy, that'll cost too much money. So everybody gave David a pass because David didn't have the tools in the toolbox in order to be successful. Well, now David has every tool available in the toolbox to be successful. So just like at South Carolina, when you don't win, you're with the Predators and you're not winning and they're giving you every tool to be successful. How are people going to react to that? And I think that is, I think that's something to worry about. David Poile had an opening statement today after the Predators made their one move, which was to acquire a guy who Adam Vingan said on our show may actually be worse than Matt Irwin. They traded Matt Irwin in a pick in order to get this guy. And this is what David Poile said.
The trading deadline is over. I'm glad about that, and I'm glad that we're now ready to make our push for the playoffs. As they say in GM 101, sometimes the best trades you make are the ones that you don't. Obviously, our play this year has caused me, you know, some pause into how we approach the deadline this year versus other years. Having said that, the flip side of that is our recent play has actually buoyed me to think that we have a really good chance to make the playoffs, and you know, consequently, I was I think we were very active in terms of the amount of phone calls that we were making to different teams in the last week, and specifically the last two or three days. I'm pretty sure I talked to all 30 other teams at least two, maybe sometimes five or six times to show interest. I mean, I think it's a real important time of year where you find out the values of your players and to find out a lot of information about other teams and who they're willing to trade and all things like that. But at the end of the day, as you can see, we made the one small trade. I really felt our bottom end defense needed to have a little bit of a change, and I think with Holzer just brings a different kind of an element. He's a bigger body player that plays pretty gritty, pretty physical, can play on our penalty killing, which certainly can use some help. So a small deal, but hopefully an important deal as we go along for the remainder of this season.
So I'm going to hold out hope on this guy. They traded for that he's not what Adam Vingan says he is, because I don't know anything about the guy, but he can't be worse than Matt Irwin. And then Adam said that there's a chance that he might actually be worse than Matt Irwin. Again, I'm not going to get upset about this yet because I have never seen this guy play. So I need to hold out. I need to give him a chance.
Yeah,
give him a chance before I get a feeling one way or another. Texter to the text line. Funny how our opinion of David Poile has dropped. He was once considered the man. Welcome to Jay. David just talked about GM 101. Is it not GM 102?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you're as good as your last game. That's the way that works. Doesn't matter what the sport is. It's all the same.
I mean, it's literally all the same. You win, you're good. You lose, you're bad. That's how people feel about it. And, I still think David Poile is a Hall of Famer and an incredibly accomplished hockey general manager and all of these things. But, this is, as he would say, and as everybody else would say, this is a results business. And this team, and even he said multiple times today, he had high expectations entering the season. So if he can certainly expect for there to be results, then I don't see why I can't expect there to be results.
And you would think, if you had a ton of injuries, if you were in a situation where your injured reserve list had five or six guys on it, that would be one thing.
Yeah, if you could explain it, then it would make sense to us.
But it's okay. Now, so we just stay healthy for a little bit longer.
Do you think we'll see something out of the team starting tomorrow that maybe they play better because the trade deadline has passed and there will be confidence inside the room that, you know what, I don't have to worry about getting traded, I don't have to worry about any of this, and then the guys can be happy.
I think they're going to get, they have to understand, and I'm sure they do. And I don't know, you hear hockey people talk about this all the time. When's the time to really get going? And I'm not sure I ever got a straight answer, but they can't be far from that. You're closing in on the start of the race to the playoffs. And so and they have to, all those guys are veteran enough, smart enough, experienced enough to know all this. And so it's going to be time for them to get going this week.
Tomorrow we'll be live at Bridgestone Arena as the Preds get set to take on the Ottawa Senators. Meanwhile, full trade reaction today on Jared and the GM. Tons of stuff to get to on Preds Insiders coming up next. Ryan Porth, Jeremy K. Gover, we're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow on Jared and the GM.